If you ask me how the High Court works here in Australia, how judges are appointed, how its decisions affect our laws and our lives, I would have to go and look it up, I'm afraid. But those decisions can be really, really influential. Could our highest courts be stacked by either side of politics, potentially, as has happened in the States, to meet political objectives? The United States, not our states, I should clarify. George Newhouse is the principal solicitor of the National Justice Project and an adjunct professor of law at Macquarie University. George, welcome to the program.
Good morning, Hilary.
Great to have you with us. And Dr. Patrick Leslie is a political scientist and research fellow at ANU. Patrick, welcome.
Good morning.
Now, Patrick, I'll start with you. How did the courts become so politicised in the USA?
Oh, well, that's a good question. In the US context, I should start by saying that my perspective on this is as a political scientist, and when we get looking at things, we tend to see politics everywhere, and so and so it's not necessarily a question of becoming political. It's sort of that it always was political, and in the States, as is well known, probably even here, they have a highly politicized selection process for their justices. So the president nominates a potential justice, and then the Senate has to sit and scrutinize and decide whether they want to confirm that justice's that nomination.
But individuals are quite interested too, aren't they? I mean, the public gets really involved.
Well, that's true, and yes, in the Australian context, it's not quite as politicised when there's a new justice announced, and that's partially because the selection process in Australia is a little bit more behind closed doors. So in the Australian constitution, as it lays out, the Governor General selects new justices of the High Court. On the advice of the government of the day, which is just shorthand for saying that the Prime Minister chooses, and we don't get to know a whole lot about it until after the fact.
Let's have a little bit of a step back for a moment and have a look at what the High Court does. George Newhouse is our apex court. How is it involved in interpreting the law? What effect does it have?
Well, it has quite a bit of an effect, but there are two pathways into the High Court. Some cases must actually be commenced in the High Court, such as the Court of Disputed Returns over election results. They are the body that must determine those disputes. However, of course, they can remit them to lower courts, but they must start in the High Court. And the other pathway are appeals from lower courts, like the federal courts or the state Supreme Courts, and they make their way up to the High Court. But the subject matter of the High Court disputes is, you know, traverses a range of issues like contract, company law, copyright, courts, martials, and criminal law. I think the point where the court really does have more controversial issues brought to it are things like native title, the Mabo case, the rights of aliens, and refugees in that, in particular, same-sex marriage and free speech, and perhaps even the rights of transsexual people. Those are the issues that probably do come up to the High Court that have some controversy around them.
Yes, well, and I guess that really makes you wonder how the people who are on that court who are making those decisions are chosen. Are they chosen for their legal knowledge, or are they chosen for the way they might approach these matters that kind of go to values, don't they? National values.
I think that's right. And there's probably always been an element of politics in the appointment of judges because it's politicians who do appoint them. I think there's two differences between Australia and the United States. Firstly, the process isn't as politicised, as you mentioned before, and as Patrick mentioned before. We don't have a congressional process that approves the decision of the executive, and I think that is a big reason why it's not as controversial. But I also think because we don't have a Bill of Rights, there's not as much heat in the appointments. They don't make, although I mentioned a number of controversial areas, without a Bill of Rights, you don't get the same kind of decisions that create as much heat in Australia.
George Newhouse, what's the bar for eligibility? Do we know about the selection criteria for High Court judges?
Well, there's no published criteria, and the Attorney General does consult with the bar associations and legal experts around the country before they make an appointment. But I presume you must be a practicing lawyer, and they tend to come from the ranks of the judiciary, although that's not always the case. You had Sir Garfield Barwick appointed to the bench, and other political appointments in the past where they haven't come from the bench.
Well, I was reading an article on The Conversation from a couple of years ago that said the High Court of Australia Act 1979 does require appointees to have been either a judge of an Australian court or enrolled as a legal practitioner for at least 5 years. So there's that legal background and information. Is there any requirement or training to, I guess, be across the fact that these decisions might have repercussions for how Australia sees itself? I know that's a very nebulous thing to train people in.
No, there's on its face, there's none of that. And up until now, you really haven't seen this kind of filtering of judges by their judicial ideology. However, the US does have this kind of approach. The Republicans have been very strong on placing their ideological compatriots on the bench at all levels of American society and states. And that does see a real change in the nature of the courts. And recently, there was a paper delivered to the Samuel Griffith Society indicating that the US style of federalist society, where the LNP start appointing fellow travelers to the bench, is starting to take root here. And that's a matter of some concern, and that's what Harry Hobbs and I wrote about in The Conversation the other day.
There was a discussion on the Law Report this morning on RN, which I did not hear, but it was on the appointments to the High Court. Speaking to our new Attorney General, and apparently he is consulting, written to the heads of all the jurisdictions, written to academics and consulting quite widely, law societies, et cetera, about who should be appointed, because we know there's two spots coming up on the bench, because of, he said, I think it goes with being a democratic country that we're prepared to listen to each other and we're a consultative government. And that's that level of consultation apparently is outside of what's required of you by the law. So just a nod to our friends at the Law Report there here on RN. We're speaking today here on Life Matters with George Newhouse, the Principal Solicitor of the National Justice Project and an Adjunct Professor of Law at Macquarie University, and Dr. Patrick Leslie, who's a political scientist and research fellow at ANU. And perhaps you've got thoughts about this discussion about the High Court, who's on it, why they're on it, and what it does, the role it plays in Australian life and Australian culture. A couple of texts already popping in. I wonder how many people of colour there are on the High Court bench. The Supreme Court is undemocratic in the States. And Eva says, please don't sensationalise Roe versus Wade. That's a decision made in a different country with a different judicial system. And she also recommends listening to the Attorney General on the ABC Law Report last night. She says, the new appointments will now be widely consulted in an open process. Patrick Leslie, let's talk about that diversity issue. How diverse is the High Court bench now?
There are three women serving.
On a bench of seven.
People. Yeah, on a bench of seven, that's right. And historically, there haven't been people of colour selected to the High Court. So it's although it's quite a small institution and been running for 100 years or so, we haven't seen huge amounts of diversity that would reflect the Australian population and change in the Australian population.
So if you make the process of appointment more transparent, and there have been many calls to do that open letter from 500 female lawyers, for example, in the wake of the scandal around former High Court Judge Dyson Heydon and his appalling behaviour, if you make that process more transparent in the way that they're suggesting, would that change things? Would it make a difference to the quality of judges?
Well, perhaps. I mean, there's good research to say that where it's been done in other countries, i.e., increasing the diversity on the benches of appellate courts or supreme courts, that it does make a quantitative difference to the provision of justices. The provision of justice for people from those diverse backgrounds. So, for example, in Israel, if there are Arabic justices or justices from Arabic backgrounds on the bench, then a Palestinian defendant is more likely to get a fair shout, and similarly in the United States as well. So those studies are showing, they're indicating that diversity can make a real difference to the quality of justice for people from traditionally marginalized backgrounds.
And how would you make the process more transparent, Patrick? What in your view would be likely to work? Would it be a public vetting process or more formalized, more detailed selection criteria?
Well, the government can choose how it wants to play this. The Constitution's quite clear that the Governor General can consult widely, and the new Attorney General can orchestrate that how he wants. To change the system entirely to one that was different, more like the United States, less like the United States, move to a non-politicized selection process would be quite difficult, would mean a change in the Constitution itself. But the government can do more to show that its selection procedures are transparent and in line with the values that the people who voted them in are looking to see. So one thing that I would say about elections and what you get in the High Court is that, you know, to borrow an old phrase, elections do have consequences, and they have consequences for the ideology of the people that get selected, and ultimately that does translate into votes and decision making on the High Court, and so it's an important thing to get right.
George Newhouse, do you have thoughts on what might make the appointment process better in the long run?
Look, I do, but I just want to take the point of your the person who texted in and said that we shouldn't be concerned about the system in Australia. I think we should be concerned. You've seen the Administrative Appeals Tribunal stacked with Liberal appointees who are former politicians and staffers. Yep. And a Senate inquiry that has actually recommended the dissembly of the current Administrative Appeals Tribunal and re-establishing a new federal administrative appeals system by no later than 1st of July 2023. The system is so rotten that the Senate recommended that they scrap it and start again. And so we are at risk of this politicization of the judiciary in this country. You've seen it in action in the AAT, and you've seen recommendations that we scrap it and start again. So, and the recommendations from the Senate in that case were for more transparency in the appointment of members, clear selection criteria, public advertising, independent panels, and limits on the discretionary powers of the Attorney General to make appointments not in accordance with the recommendation of the independent panel. That's the kind of structure that might lead to more transparency and confidence in appointments.
Mm, and when we think about the concrete impacts on people's lives, that's having flow-on effects to people on the NDIS. We're seeing a lot of people having to head off to the AAT to get their cases reviewed lately. We're speaking with two guests who are very interested in how the High Court works and how it trickles down to affect our lives, why we should be interested in it. George Newhouse, Director of the National Justice Project at the University of Technology, Sydney, and Patrick Leslie, who's a political scientist and a research fellow at ANU. And we're taking your text too. Erica says, Ruth Bader Ginsburg was trying to hang on to life until the end of the Trump era. She was a Supreme Court judge in the States. Had she lived, the Roe versus Wade results may have been different, says Erica. Trump appointed three judges in the last months of his presidency. Patrick Leslie, you've done a bit of work on how judges vote and who they might favour. Can you predict whether someone is going to vote in a progressive or a conservative way based on past performance?
Based on past performance and also based on ideology. So this is a study done with colleagues of mine at the ANU, Professor Zoe Robinson and Dr. Jill Shepherd. And what we did was we looked at the ideology of justices based on newspaper reports from the 6 months prior to their appointment, and we measured it on a scale from liberal to conservative, so just one scale.
And small L liberal, we should say. Small L liberal.
That's right. That's small L liberal. And then what we did was we looked at those justices' performance in the High Court and how they voted when cases came up that split the court, so that there was some disagreement. And what we found was that typically ideologically liberal justices voted together, ideologically conservative justices voted together, and they voted in conservative or small L liberal ways. So what that's showing is that the appointments process does have an effect on how justices vote in the High Court, and often as a political scientist, we sometimes get criticism and say that justices don't vote, they decide. But in the case of contested cases, voting is probably the best word to use.
George Newhouse, given that, you know, there's been discovered to be this loyalty effect to the person that appoints you or the party that appoints you, is there a difference in the way each of the major parties approaches High Court appointments?
Well, I think you've heard, on Radio National this morning in the Law Report, that this government, through the Attorney General, is taking the process seriously and is, on its face, appears to be more open and transparent about the process. As I said, there are influences, including former Senator Amanda Stoker, who were actively arguing for a Republican-style appointment process where, fellow travellers are appointed to the High Court to ensure that, the policy and ideology of the government are reinforced. And that position was put quite clearly at a Samuel Griffiths Society discussion paper. So, I do think that whilst this Attorney General appears to be going through a more open and transparent process, there are differences in approaches, and we should be concerned about approaches that mimic the US-style federalist society.
Mark Dreyfus also said on the Law Report that we want to return to a transparent and merit-based appointment system for these courts and the Administrative Appeals Tribunal. That will include things like calling for expressions of interest. But merit is a tricky one, isn't it? Because it's been argued that if you've got a panel of people from a particular background, they look out into the sea of faces and they see reflections of themselves, and that's what looks like merit to them. How do you make sure you're getting merit and diversity?
That's a really good point. And if you look at our High Court, whilst there is more gender diversity, in other aspects it's extremely plain vanilla and reflects our political class. I mean, in many ways, I think that we need to encourage diversity, and it's something that should be on the key criteria for selection. There should be some positive discrimination to select people of other cultures, culturally and linguistically diverse people, or people with other lived experience. We have a very, very, privileged group of people both in Parliament, and then their appointments tend to reflect that privilege.
So just a quick question, George Newhouse, before we wrap up here, our discussion about the High Court. How much power does it really have, given that we don't have a Bill of Rights underlying their decisions?
That is the nub of the question. I think one of the reasons why we don't have as much controversy about our High Court is that the founders of our nation took out human rights and a Bill of Rights from the Constitution. In America, they actually have a Bill of Rights in their constitution that the Supreme Court can apply. We don't have that. So in many ways, a lack of a Bill of Rights means that our High Court is neutered in some respect and can really only make decisions on the margin. And it does mean also that even if the court makes a decision that the government doesn't like, particularly about legislation, the government can usually overrule the High Court by passing new laws that fix the problem. And so therefore, I do think that a Bill of Rights is absolutely essential if we want to start protecting individual rights in this country.
We do hear that a lot on Life Matters. Fascinating discussion today. Thank you so much, both of you, for your time. George Newhouse, really appreciate you making the time for us today.
Thank you.
Director of the National Justice Project at UTS. Patrick Leslie, thank you so much for telling us about your research.
Thank you very much.
Patrick's a political scientist and a research fellow at ANU. Dr. Patrick Leslie, I should say.